Mike Pence named coronavirus czar, a DCS oversight bill scaled back, plus lawmakers try to create a new voter purge system, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 28th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, President Trump designated Vice President Mike Pence in charge of the administration's coronavirus response.
We're doing really well, and Mike is going to be in charge, and Mike will report back to me, but he's got a certain talent for this.
President Donald Trump sought to allay fears about the impact of the spreading coronavirus outbreak. Vice President Mike Pence says the administration has already established travel restrictions, quarantined returning Americans, and declared a public health emergency.
As a former governor from the state where the first MERS case emerged in 2014, I know full well the importance of presidential leadership, the importance of administration leadership, and the vital role of partnerships of state and local governments and health authorities in responding to the potential threat of dangerous infectious diseases.
Pence has long been sharply criticized for his delayed response to an HIV outbreak in southern Indiana, which studies suggest worsened the crisis. Was or is Pence the right choice? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is Mike Pence the right choice to lead this effort?
That's a serious question.
It's a very...
Over to me. She has nothing to say.
You know, leave aside the fact that he completely mishandled the opioid crisis and the HIV crisis in southern Indiana and couldn't take the necessary health care steps that were would have helped prevent we don't know how many deaths from that. I mean, his record on that...
I don't think they're leaving that aside, by the way.
Well, his record on that is abysmal. But on top of that, when Donald Trump was a citizen and President Obama named Ron Klain as the Ebola czar, he was pounding the table, not a licensed health care provider, not a doctor. How dare he be appointed? And look what he points. Of course, you know, it could be worse, as Donna Shalala said today. Could be worse. Could be Donald Trump himself. That would be worse.
We asked Speaker Brian Bosma this very question this week, and he said, obviously, Mike Pence does not have medical expertise. There are going to be plenty of people at the table with medical expertise.
Right.
He thinks Mike Pence is someone who's good at marshalling everyone together and creating a plan. Is Mike Pence the best choice to lead this?
Yeah, he wasn't appointed to invent the vaccine for...
Well, thank heaven for that.
...the coronavirus. So let's all calm down. He's there to coordinate the federal government's response to this between every state, every federal agency that needs to be...
Well, let's hope religion doesn't factor into it.
That needs to be brought to the table, or is at the table, and is working, but needs to be organized and be the leader and the public face of this for the public. So... There's been talk about looking back at his experience in Scott County, and even Terry Gooden this week wouldn't say anything bad about his time as governor when he coordinated it and brought. And it's been a lot's been focused on just syringe exchange, and we're talking about that in the context of the legislative session. There were a lot of other services that were brought to bear in Scott County, and there is fair criticism that it took too long. But
healthcare facilities too.
But you can't deny that on the back end it did once
everything was in place
it did work.
Right.
And
we're now relitigating in the 2020 session.
Which we are relitigating, but that I think for leadership and certainly for Governor Holcomb,
yes,
who loosened the ability to bring it
made it easier
to bring it to bring those services back.
Yeah,
if
there's
it ever
no question
again.
Where leadership is on, or at least House. Leadership.
But it requires...
Right, but that's House leadership.
It's a very conservative legislature, yeah, and there's a lot of new members who weren't around 7 years ago
John, I want to ask this question, which is, Mike alluded to, you know, obviously Pence will be the public face of the administration's response. There are some cynics out there, and certainly none at this table, I'm sure, but there are some cynics out there who suggested that this is Donald Trump wanting a fall guy in case this doesn't go well. Is there? Do you think there's truth in that, or is that the nature of any time that somebody other than the top person is appointed to lead something? That's always the risk you run.
It's harder to fire him.
I don't sense that's what's at work here. I think what Donald Trump saw in Mike Pence is somebody who has incredible discipline when it comes to messaging and message management. I mean, this is a former talk show host. I mean, this is a former radio guy. This is somebody who, when he was
in the... Are you saying I could be the vice president?
You could, actually.
Probably be better than the incumbent.
And don't forget, when he was in the U.S. House, when his position, when he was third ranking within the caucus, he was effectively the message management guy for the caucus. Yep. He had a radio studio set up in his office. If there's anything, now the message may not... come across as not answering the question, as George Stephanopoulos so famously pointed out during the RFRA debate one Sunday morning, not too many years ago. But the discipline is there in terms of the management.
Let me ask this, which is, Mike Pence, maybe he didn't handle the HIV epidemic as well as he could have. But could you also argue that that's also a reason to appoint him to this position, because he's experienced something? He learned from it. He learned from it, and now he can take those lessons into this latest crisis.
He at least does have some experience on how to overall deal with an infectious disease breakout. I think the bigger concern about the whole thing is, I mean, we all know that Donald Trump is going to have these unrealistic expectations. And I think, you know, Pence should be worried about, you know, the fact is that we can't stop this outbreak. It's going to happen here in the U.S. And is that automatically mean he failed? Yeah. I mean, the idea is to stop the scope and severity of it. So I just worry that, you know, because Trump will just expect him to somehow work a miracle that isn't literally possible, that, you know, he'll end up taking a bullet for him.
Miracles are kind of big with Mike.
With Mike, that's exactly right. But the other thing with him, too, though, is it's not only the outbreak of HIV and the opioid crisis in southern Indiana. It is also the fact that he cut funding for public health, okay? And he closed facilities which might have identified people early enough to save lives. And if he's learned from that, great. But in terms of being the best person for this, not on your life. And the fact that Governor Holcomb is defending him shows a lack of...
Good thing we have a surplus, so we can bring a lot of resources to bear quickly if we need to. If we need to go supplement funding...
The problem for the White House is...
Well, their proposal is a fraction of what the healthcare people say is needed. They proposed $2 billion. People are saying it's $8 to $10 billion is necessary.
The president said he would take it, though. He would take what's offered if it's more than the $2.5 that he wanted.
Oh, how big of him? That's leadership?
But the problem here is that because this is now tied to the performance of Wall Street, normally a president in the past, when threatened with a pandemic, might have said, you know, everything from wash your hands to cough in your arm to bigger picture issues. But
don't,
it's always sounding an alarm. It's always being, this is a serious thing, we'll take it seriously. I think the temptation here, and we've already seen it play out, is to kind of poo-poo it in a way for fear that...
It's being overblown. That
well, he's already said that media. This is a media construct to a large extent, that it's the fault of media for creating a bigger story than it needs to be.
I mean, that's the memo I got in our message.
But I think that's
media
all.
Conspiracy,
I think that's all tied to. Well, that's right after the Chinese created this in their weapons.
And we made Japan shut down all of their schools.
We were pretty good.
We're very powerful. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: is Vice President Mike Pence the right choice to lead the U.S. response to the coronavirus? A yes or B no. Last week's question: will Attorney General Curtis Hill win re-election in 2020? 60% of you say yes, 27% say another Republican will win, while 13% say a Democrat will take the office. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, a House committee this week dramatically scaled back a bill that would have provided greater oversight of the Department of Child Services. The original bill would have created a new committee required to investigate decision-making at DCS over every case in which a child is seriously hurt or dies after having contact with the agency. But a House panel decided instead to pursue resurrecting an old legislative study committee dedicated to examining child welfare issues. DCS and the Indiana Judges Association like that change. One juvenile court judge testified that there are already several state, county and local boards tasked with reviewing child fatalities, making a new one unnecessary. And she says the study committee is better suited to look at a broad range of issues with DCS. But foster and adoptive parent advocates say all those existing committees lack adequate representation from community members. Mike O'Brien, will a resurrected study committee be enough oversight for DCS?
I think asking that question presumes that there isn't enough ability to undermine the decisions that are made at the Department of Child Services or have a separate body that can then question or overturn decision-making that's made at the Department of Child Services instead of implementing the plan that was put forward, which has been put in place and has proven to improve child fatality and caseloads for caseworkers, and continue on that plan. I mean, if every time we have something bad happen in state government, which is going to continue to happen from time to time, if we put another layer of government on top of it or oversight on top of it, you're ultimately just tying the hands of the people that we have empowered to make these decisions to begin with.
But the question about oversight of DCS is not a new one. Yes, no. It has resurfaced because of the controversies over the last few years.
Right, and improvements have been made and continue to be made, and we'll continue to see if that's the case. And if it's not, then they need the flexibility to change course without some separate body that gets to interfere with it.
The original bill with this committee that would have looked at individual cases, is that micromanaging a problem, though?
Look, the DCS has lost any credibility on keeping statistics or reporting back. And the fact that when now they're obligated to put out the child fatality numbers, and they did it on December 31st at 4 p.m., and guess what? We have the same number of children dying. So all of these oversights and all of these improvements and all the rest of that has not affected the child fatality rate. So they don't have any ability or any credibility on these questions. And if there's additional oversight needed to protect children, then it ought to be there. And Governor Holcomb ought to stand up and demand it.
To be clear, the child fatality reports are about 18 months in arrears. So
even so,
any of the new changes we have not seen impacted. Now, in that last report, there were 10 children who died after substantiated interaction with DCS. There isn't anyone who is not within DCS that's looking through those decisions to see if any mistakes were made. And let's be clear, a child could die if they did everything right. They could have made every decision correctly, and someone can still do terrible
things.
Sure.
So, but you know, these local child fatality review teams, they're not reviewing DCS decision-making. They're literally just deciding whether a child died of abuse or neglect. They're,
right,
like, looking at the
right
medical
so the,
parts
so,
of
so
it.
The judge who pointed out, well, we have a lot of committees looking at this stuff. That's true in one sense, but also not doing exactly what
the bill would have done.
What the bill
right
would have done.
Correct.
Drill down to the individual claim level.
Right. But to that point, though, too, we know that there is a problem that is improving with the turnover of case managers at DCS that we are having, and the nature of those positions is you're always going to have some trouble holding on to those folks. I can't imagine what doing that job must be like. But to that end, if you're one of those caseworkers, and now you find out if this original bill had gone through, I'm going to have some board somewhere looking into every little decision I've made in every single case where something bad happens. Is that good for morale?
Probably not. The notion that you have one boss before, now you have 24 or whatever, by the time you factor in all the people who are going to review this and second guess, things always, as they say, have clarity after the fact when things are unfolding in real time.
You can look at things like that. You can look at those substantial interactions.
I think
it was
John's turn to talk.
Well, anyway.
That's never stopped you before. But here's, I think, what we're overlooking. And that is, it's not as if this agency has no pressure to perform in accordance with best practice. I think that the best mechanism here for holding the agency accountable is simply the spotlight that goes with being an agency that was on the front pages of papers and in the top block of newscasts for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And so it seems to me that there already is a tremendous onus on managers, especially in the agency, the director level on down.
And you could argue that a legislative study committee solely devoted to child welfare, instead of just, well, there's a committee that's investigating 16 different things, and one of them will happen to be DCS. Having one solely dedicated to that keeps that spotlight on them, at least in
part. Well, I think the spotlight is going to be there anyway.
No matter what.
If we have another tragic situation, and it's tragic any time a child dies, but if we have another one of the situations sort of that got us all focused on this in the first place and prompted the resignation in protest of the director of the, what's it been now, 2 years, two and a half, three years, I guess, yeah. Where you have a true tragedy where every box is checked off, you know, somebody dropped the ball, multiple people dropped the ball, you know, there were warning signs that were ignored.
The lights are back on.
If that happens again, I don't think we need a committee necessarily. I mean, the people will know.
Yeah.
And there will be a spotlight of accountability that it shines pretty brightly on the agency.
All right. Well, Republicans are advancing a bill to replace Indiana's method of quickly purging voters from its voter rolls after the current system was halted in court. Indiana tried to speed up the process by which it removed voters from the rolls by using a system run by the Kansas Secretary of State. That program, which critics said deleted eligible voters, was halted in two federal courts. Legislation moving through the House requires Indiana to create its own system similar to Kansas's. Voter advocacy groups argue the replacement isn't much better, saying it will perpetuate past mistakes and lead to further lawsuits. But Republicans claim the new system should comply with federal law, and they say other existing voter roll cleanup systems involving other states are too costly.
Nikki Kelly, does it feel a little like we're replacing one bad system with another one?
You know, I'm just going to point out that we decided we needed to make our own standardized assessment test for our own curriculum. And we spent $40 million, and our test scores dropped, and now we don't use them for accountability because it's apparently terrible. So I'm not so sure that we should be reinventing the wheel.
There's no wheel. We're inventing it, period.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can use right now to check to see if people are registered multiple areas.
Well, here's the real problem that I kind of get to. So there is a system under federal law where you clean up your voter rolls. You're required to do that, in fact. But it takes a couple of election cycles to do it under federal law. Now, there is allowances to do that faster, but it's hard to do the right way under federal law. Why are we in a rush to do that so much?
Well, I think it's obvious. It's political. There's nothing more political than elections. And there's a lot of gamesmanship going on here. I don't think we should pretend there isn't, just as there is with redistricting and the way that maps. I mean, that is what goes on here. Let's be realistic about it. Now, it's the way it's framed, of course, is we are all concerned about the sanctity of our elections, and they have to be valid, and we all can agree to that. But the problems that we have, and there are many, with at the federal level, at state level, with the management of elections, basically aren't this kind of issue. I mean, we have a lot of other issues with people trying to manipulate opinion and create polarization and spread bogus information and so forth. But I've yet to see any investigation, including the one that was headed by the czar of the fight against coronavirus,
yeah.
When that was short-lived,
involving, but, by the way, the Kansas Secretary of State.
Yeah,
but I mean if there was something there, you would think that they would have found it. So there are problems, but I don't think this is the
solution. Talk about reinventing a wheel, and there is no wheel. There is a new-ish system that involves 20-something states that looked at the Kansas model and said, well, that's clearly not working. Let's do it a better way, and the reason we don't want to join that was given in the committee was, well, it might be expensive. Is that a good enough answer?
I think it is in this situation. I think there are other questions about the motivation of the creation of that group, too, but of that ERIC system, I think it was the acronym for it. There's two things here. One, it takes, in order to purge someone off a voter roll for being inactive, that takes like a decade. It takes like two full federal cycles of inactivity and multiple notifications before you can finally go through that process and go to the county clerk and actually do that. So this isn't a quick turnaround.
No,
when you're striking
that people. System is
That's
not,
one system. Right. This system says you move to another state and you're registered to vote and you're still registered to vote in the state you moved from. Can we compare these state voter rolls and strike the duplicates? And this is no more than a maintenance function. This isn't partisan driven. This isn't it's happening in Republican and Democratic
states. They're just looking at
And there's no attempt to pull people off inappropriately. But you need a system that is easy to use and comparable across multiple states.
I think the question that begs, though, is it feels like that system, when you're not actually contacting a voter, feels like you're always going to accidentally delete some people.
Right.
Is that system? if that is possible, that you're going to accidentally delete some people who shouldn't be deleted from the rolls, is it worth it?
No, it's not worth it. And what's ironic about this is, you know, we're spending money on this to make sure we keep the vote down, all right? We don't want to spend the money to protect ballot integrity. We don't want to make sure that there are paper trails for all the ballots that we have. We don't want to upgrade the system in more than half of our counties to guarantee that those things are safe and can be accurately counted. We want to build swine barns with cash. We want to suppress the vote with whatever money's available. And that's
vote.
what the agenda has been.
Crescendoing into a criticism.
Hey, well, you know, we're paying cash for all of these things, but we can't update.
We are updating.
We're doing 10 every year.
There is a solution.
If
the concern here is that, you know, people are on the rolls and they need to get out, and we maybe a few people fall through the cracks. Do what some states are pursuing, which is same-day voter registration.
Right.
So therefore,
I'm going to say that's
a poison pill. That's not going to happen. Yeah. But if you really are concerned and you want to keep the rolls,
or you could just get rid of voter registration
it's
altogether.
It's all about
voter
suppression. Some states have done that.
Yeah, they have in North Dakota, I think. A key lawmaker this week scrapped a proposal to require teachers who carry guns in school to receive specialized training. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports on why the legislation is being dropped.
The bill that would require specialized training for teachers whose districts allow them to carry guns in school passed the Senate earlier this month, but lawmakers are nearing the end of the legislative session, and House Education Committee Chair Bob Boehning says he won't offer the bill a hearing ahead of the committee deadline. He says the requirements in the bill were too narrow and would make it hard to access training.
John Schwann, the Senate Republicans who pushed this bill in the first place argued that a vote against it was a vote to allow untrained teachers to carry guns in schools. Is that too simplistic, or is that really what this is about?
You could certainly make that argument. And one thing I think you could say here is, even though this is a short session, even though we talk about how frenetic it is, bills that are not getting a hearing, it's not because somebody forgot about them, or it's not because some committee chair says, I can't do it all and give it all. Every bill that died is because
somebody
didn't like it. Either the chairman or chairwoman didn't like it, or somebody who has the ear of the chair didn't like it. Clearly, this is an issue that is a very much a hot-button issue. It's not as if it snuck up on anybody. I don't think anybody can say with seriousness that it just kind of we don't have time for it.
I'll say this: it's not like this concern from Bob Boehning that he expressed came out of nowhere. We had Senate Republicans, even who ended up voting for the bill, who said, "Are we making this a little too specific?"
Totally. And there is room for compromise on this bill if you just want to back down some of the, you know, things. But in the end, we have some Second Amendment purists who really feel like this would be a slippery slope. Requiring training, gun training of any kind, would be a slippery slope to requiring gun training for anyone who carries. And so there are some people that no matter what training you put in there, they are not going to support
the bill.
Wouldn't
that be a terrible idea to have people trained in how to use weapons? When do we let the NRA control the legislature? I mean, when did that begin to happen? It is gross what happens with this. Well, I don't think so, because then we had muskets, which took a minute and a half to refile. We didn't have automatic weapons. But it's ridiculous. I mean, the idea that you're going to have teachers running around schools with kids there without training with guns is crazy.
Given now, the very few school districts that do this do require training of their teachers, though they're not required to. But is this one of those issues that is crying out for compromise that might happen in another year and not necessarily at the end of this short session?
I think so. They were right up against the end, and I think there was a place to go there. But because of these different factions, which you can move, by the way.
Yeah. And a little. Some of them.
Some of them. But you could leave some behind, too.
I don't think Jim Lucas is moving.
No, this does put Ann's longstanding support of a teacher pay raises in a new light when you have people running around angry. That's
right. Well, finally, speaking of House Education Committee Chair Bob Boehning, this week killed a bill that would generally require students to fill out a FAFSA, the federal student aid form. And he did so, he told reporters like Nikki Kelly, because that bill's author, Senator Jean Lysing, amended a cursive writing education requirement into a bill in her chamber over Boehning's wishes. Now, Michael Brian, Boehning later did put the FAFSA language, which he supports, into another bill, but Even though it wasn't written in cursive, did you think that Senator Lysing got the message he was trying to send?
If it was written in cursive, apparently Gene Lysing's the only one who would be able to read it, because we're all like incapable of, without this requirement of writing or understanding cursive.
Now, because the language survives, is this something kind of fun, what Bob Boehning did?
I think it's certainly a sharp stick in the eye for Senator Lysing. I mean, it couldn't be more clear.
That said, is she going to stop?
No, she's not going to stop. And I will say this, when I talked to her, she actually was surprised that he admitted it out loud.
That's true. All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.